If you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch is probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio. Oh, no, no, no. Witch Police Radio.
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. One of the things about this show that I think people know, if you've been listening for a while or even for a little bit, is that, you know, the focus is musicians. I talk to people who play every genre of music, from death metal to country to hip hop to jazz to classical to whatever. And I usually don't stray too far from the music thing. But obviously, Winnipeg is a city that has a lot of live entertainment of all kinds going on, from theater to music, of course, to comedy. And so the guest on this episode today is someone who fits into that last category. And I know it's kind of fudging the theme of the show a little bit, but it's my show and I can kind of choose what I want to do. So, you know, deal with it. And, you know, my guest has an album coming out. So this fits with the general sort of theme of the show anyway, even though it's not music. So I think the best way to start this off is if you want to introduce yourself, give a bit of background about what you do, especially seeing as this is a bit different than what I usually cover on the show.
Sure. My name's Jared Story and I'm a stand-up comedian from here in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I'm happy to fudge your theme, man.
Awesome. And so, I mean, stand-up comedy, it seems like it seems consistently growing in Winnipeg. I don't know if that's just my perception as an outsider. I mean, I often feel very disconnected from the stand-up scene. I see all the posters about it. I see especially venues like the Park Theater often putting on shows. I know you do an annual show that seems to be getting a lot of buzz every year. Or maybe it's more than annual, I'm not even sure. But I've always felt, and I don't want to start off on like a downer, but my kind of relationship with the stand-up comedy scene is I always feel very uncomfortable about the idea of seeing a bad amateur comic. With an amateur band, I could listen to a band playing out of tune, you know, for an hour straight and completely atonal and horrible, because I think it's because I get it. Like, I've been there. I've been in that band. Whereas comedy, to me, it seems so much more, I feel more embarrassed for the person on stage than I would in a band situation, because I don't know why, but so I've often avoided it.
I get that.
Does that make sense?
I totally get that. It is more embarrassing. It's just them. You know, they don't have anybody to really share that embarrassment with when it's not going well.
That's so. Right. Yeah. So I think that's kind of one of the reasons I haven't gone out to see as much local stand-up. I love that it exists, and I'm definitely, like I said, I see a lot of it happening and see, you know, people are really into it, but I've avoided, I think, for that reason, that I just feel like, what happens if it's bad? Where do I hide, you know, as an audience member? So well, can you just maybe give like a quick sort of overview of what the stand-up scene is like here?
Well, I think like the current stand-up scene kind of started probably about 2009 or so. Some guys who were around the same age started doing shows at like Comedy at the Cavern on Sunday nights at the Cavern. And Thursdays at the Handsome Daughter, or, you know, previous Nate had a different name at the time.
Yeah. It had a bunch of names.
So we all, you know, all of us kind of around the same age, and we all kind of started together, and lots of kind of, I guess, a healthy / unhealthy competition going on. But, you know, I think a lot of those guys now are the ones that they're putting on the shows now. You got to Benji Rothman putting on shows at The Basement, which is this newer comedy venue on the west side of the city.
And
these are the people that are hosting at Rumors now. They're hosting at Yuck Yucks. So they're doing the shows around town. I feel like that was kind of, but you can kind of trace it all back to like John B. Duff yelling at us at the Cavern in 2009. So,
right. So yeah, I guess like, it seemed very much, and John B. Duff actually was many, many years ago, I did an episode about an event that was happening at the Park Theater, and he was there. And I mean,
yeah,
when he passed, it seemed like it was a big deal for the comedy scene. Like, that seemed like a guy who was super influential to a lot of you.
Yeah, he was a big deal for us. You know, he was just, he was older than most of us.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, he's kind of our comedy godfather, you know? But he ran the show at the Cavern. He ran it really tight.
Yeah.
And he was like, he wanted you to get better. So if you were kind of slacking off, if you weren't writing new jokes, if you weren't, you know, trying to get better, he would let you know.
Right.
And, in some people, that scared off a lot of people, which is good.
I bet it is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great kind of quality control device that we had here in the stand-up scene. And so, yeah, he was a very influential figure here in local comedy. Yeah.
Well, I think when seeing all the tributes to him, you know, around that time, it kind of struck me that this scene is very much like the DIY punk scene. Basically, in the sense that you just explained, people are trying to, like, you know, make each other do better, and there is the ones who aren't any good are going to kind of maybe fade away, but everyone else is kind of pulling each other up, and they're doing it on their own because there's not really an ecosystem for anyone doing it sort of at a bigger level.
Sure.
But just to, I mean, get away from the scene itself, you've been doing this for a long time. I mean, I've seen your name showing up on posters and things for comedy shows for years and years now, and you have your first album. So is that common as a comedian to be putting out an album this far into your career? Because I feel like you don't see them as much as you'd see musicians releasing albums, for obvious reasons, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I think, it took me a while to do my first album, that's for sure. I think, the album itself is not really how people are accessing comedy these days.
For sure.
But I really wanted to, you know, have some sort of proof that I was pretty good at this, that I can show somebody, you know, when I'm an old man. But but also there are opportunities to get played as a comedian with audio recordings. Like Sirius XM does have a comedy channel, so, and comedians that get spun on that channel do stand to make a decent amount of cash doing it. So that's, I think, one of the main reasons why you'll see Canadian comics putting out albums is just to try to get on there. But mostly I just made it because I wanted to have an album. You know, I'm a huge fan of rock and roll and heavy metal. And I used to work as you did too. I know I used to write for Uptown.
That's right, yeah.
And review music and go to music and see bands and stuff. So I was always this, I have no musical talent, but I wanted to be them. I mean, this is the closest I can get is I can make jokes and I can put that on an album.
So, yeah. So,
That's why I wanted to do it.
I mean, obviously with a comedy album there, I mean, as far as I know, anyway, they're mostly recorded live. This is recorded live.
Yeah.
How do you decide? I mean, did you plan well ahead of time that this was going to be the show that you recorded, or is this something that you just record everything and then sort of hope for the best and then sort of choose the ones that work best? Like, I guess maybe a better way of approaching that is there extra pressure on the idea of, like, this is going to be recorded, this is the version of this joke that's going to be sort of the enduring one?
Yeah, there was extra pressure. I had planned for it to be that night. It also happened to be my birthday that night, so I was like, okay, this seems like a good reason to do this. I'll book the Park Theater. I've been doing shows at the Park Theater for 10 years, but I thought this time I'm going to make it all about myself, you know, and do it. There was extra pressure, but luckily having been performing in that room for so long, I kind of knew what to expect.
Sure.
For me, it's very like room-based comedy. Like if you've been in a room for a while, you kind of know how it works and you feel comfortable. So I felt fairly comfortable leading up, right before the show.
Of course, yeah.
When I was thinking about the show for weeks before that, I was definitely a bit of a basket case, but I knew I had the material. I've been, you know, some of the material is a decade old and it's been changed here and there.
Yeah.
And some of it was stuff that I wrote just leading up to the event.
I have no segue for this next joke. So a little bit about myself. I'm a vegetarian. Don't clap all at once. No, I am a vegetarian. I used to be a vegan. I was a full-blown vegan for 5 years. Full-on vegan. I didn't mean to say full-blown. That sounds like I caught veganism and I wasn't going to get over it. Now, when I was vegan, man, and even when I, now that I'm vegetarian, people are always like, how'd you do that? How'd you stop eating meat? Truth is, I did it gradually, you know? I stopped consuming animals gradually. I started with the crackers. Animal crackers, I just cut them out of my life. I really eased into it. And then after a little while, I became what is known as a pescatarian. You guys know what that is? Yeah, that's when I only ate goldfish crackers. That's kind of a weird time in my life. And then I became a vegetarian, and then a vegan, or as my dad calls it. Well, he stopped calling me. Last thing he said to me was, "You're a disgrace to the farm!" He's here, I'm just lying. Hi, Dad. Anyway, here's the thing, though. It's not that weird anymore. Like, when I first went vegan, it was kind of different, especially a guy doing it, because there wasn't a lot of guys doing it. But, like, now it's kind of normal. Everywhere you go, there's vegan and vegetarian options, and there was just a vegan week. Just like Chicken Week and Burger Week, there was Vegan Week. And also, meat's really expensive, so people are, I think, eating a little less of it. And for other reasons, too. I think that trend is going to continue, you know? I think 30, 40, maybe 50 years down the road, eating meat will be like what smoking is now. People will be like, "Jared, you still eating meat?" You're like, "Only when I'm drinking." Be just a bunch of bologna sandwich eaters all huddled 15 feet from the door. God damn. Remember when you used to be able to eat bologna inside? It's fucking cold out here. "Frank, what are you doing out here? I thought you quit bologna." He's like, "It's hard. Hardest thing you'll ever do, they say, is quitting bologna." "Can I bum a smoke, Tam? Come on, guys." Then all the people inside the office are like, "Can you believe those guys? They've already taken like 5 bologna breaks today." It's not fair. Just because they're addicted to bologna, they get to go outside whenever they want? It's time theft, if you ask me. Like, "Brian, time theft? What the fuck are you talking about? You yourself were addicted to bologna not 5 years ago." "Yeah, but I quit. I quit cold tofu." That's a phrase that'll exist in the future. Just kind of get you guys used to it. People get mad at me for not eating meat. Like, I'll just be sitting there not eating meat, and they'll get mad at me. Probably because I'm better than them, but isn't that why we do it? No. A little plant-based arrogance. No, here's the thing. I don't care what you guys do, but you need to have better arguments, meat eaters. You have bad arguments, and you always want to argue with me. I don't want to argue with you, but you want to argue with me, you know? And, like, you're the status quo, so you don't have good arguments. You haven't worked on them. Like, my one friend was like, "Jared, I understand where you're coming from, but you got to understand where I'm coming from. I only eat free-range animals. I only eat animals that have had a good life." It's like, a good life? That's like a cannibal that says, "I only eat kids that go to St. John's Ravenscourt. I only eat the kids that have had a good life. I would never eat a public school kid. Never. Just those tasty SJR kids, that's all. And only the white meat. I have my boundaries. I may be a cannibal, but I have my boundaries." I don't know. It's kind of weird being from the country and being a vegetarian. You know, it's not a very normal thing out there. And also because, like, you know, all my friends and family growing up, they would raise animals. And they would also hunt animals. Most of the people I know hunted, you know? And I would have to eat the fruits of their labor. Which wasn't fruit, it was meat. They should call it the meats of their labor, but they don't. And we'd have these big family feasts, you know? And I'd have to eat whatever. And my uncle, he was like the patriarch of the family. He'd like be like, "Let's thank this animal for making the ultimate sacrifice." And even as a kid, I thought, it didn't make the sacrifice. You did. Sacrifices have to be willing. It's not like the deer was like, yeah, I got this one, guys. I'll take one for the team. No. The only true animal sacrifice is a dog wearing a sweater. That's the only true animal sacrifice. Because a dog wearing a sweater is like, well, I don't like this, but it's picture day and I'm part of the family.
I do want to talk about the material, but just before we get into that, I mean, the Park Theater is a big venue. It's especially now that they've renovated, it's a huge room.
Yeah.
And listening to the, you know, listening to the album, it has a very kind of intimate sort of feel to it. How do you record that in that room? I mean, you know, obviously you had people there, that helps. And yeah, the crowd, you know, contributes to the whole vibe of the comedy album, but
sure,
it's such a huge room. Like, how did you get it? What was the process of recording just spoken word basically in that room and getting the crowd reaction too?
Yeah, honestly, it was just, I mean, I guess I got a little lucky, I think. It was just my crowd mic plus, my mic plus two crowd mics over top of the audience. And then I gave it to Cam Lewepke.
Okay.
And he mixed it, and he did a fantastic job of mixing it. And I think it sounds really great. Like,
it does,
I wasn't
sound
sure
good,
what to expect. Yeah, because I wasn't sure what to expect because, you know, like the smart choice for somebody at my level would have been to do it in a smaller room where you get the laughs are bouncing off the walls but I thought, you know what, I got this hook up at the park and I know I can get the venue now. Yeah. I just gotta convince a bunch of people to come. That was the hard part, was to try to get everybody out, which I managed to do, sound wise it was pretty straightforward. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, because I've never really considered that before. I mean, you listen to a comedy album or listen to comedy on the radio, wherever it is, the laughs are there, right? They're very present.
Yeah.
Always. And sometimes you hear some famous comedian, you know, they're in an arena or something, and that's a totally different vibe. But yeah, you've managed to, the mics obviously worked because you get it.
They worked.
It sounds close. It sounds like the crowd is right there with you, like right in front of you. And I know the park has, you know, it has a little bit of a distance from stage to audience because of the size of it.
Yeah, it was just one of those nights too where everything seemed to be clicking. Like, I didn't feel, I was kind of having a little bit of an out of body experience while I was up there. Just, I think, because I knew what I was doing so well. I had rehearsed and practiced and ran these jokes so much leading up to it that it just kind of all worked out. And I thought that that the mics captured it. And I thought Cam really did a good job of. Because when I got the raw tracks back, I was like, okay, I guess I could try mixing this. And then I immediately was like, no, I got to get someone who knows what they're doing. And then he made it sound so good. So,
well, it's interesting because it seems like it should be easy, right? With just vocals and laughing. But yeah, obviously, someone who knows it's going to make a big difference.
And that's why I went to him, because I knew he knew what he was doing. I mean, if the laughter's too high, if I'm too low on the mix, you know, I knew he would give me a pretty tasteful mix, and
yeah,
he did.
Yeah, it sounds great. So, you know, you mentioned a few minutes ago that the material, some of this is quite old. You've been doing it for years. Again, I'm going to compare this to bands because that's sort of my comfort zone. But
sure,
if you're in a band, you make a record, you're expected to play those songs. People want to hear those songs again. They want to hear them again and again.
Yeah.
And depending how successful the record is, you might be playing those songs the rest of your life, the rest of your career. Comedy seems different. I don't know if it is, but it seems like are these jokes dead now that you've recorded them, and now that they're like, can you get away with performing them again?
I think I can. I try not to do them all the time, but they're still like, you know, sure, I got 150 friends or whatever out to the park that night, but you know, when I'm doing shows around town, I'm still running into tons of people that I've never done jokes to, and maybe there's a couple of people out in the audience that have heard them, but you know, they're gonna have to live with that. it took a long time to get that material, so I'm still holding on to some of it, and I'm working on getting some new jokes in there, and I hope that, and you kind of have to like give yourself that challenge too, right? Like you have to be like, tonight I'm just doing new stuff, or I'm gonna make half of my act tonight new, because you don't want to be that person who's just doing the same hour for their whole career. So
well, I guess
I'm still writing.
There's not demand for that, right? Like, people don't want to hear that, or do they? Like, is there demand for comedy fans to hear kind of the hits, like mixed in with the?
I,
th-
It's weird that there, I think there kind of is. Like, I remember being at a Brian Regan show, and do you know Brian Regan?
I know the name, yeah. I don't think I've heard any
great
stuff, yeah.
Great stand-up comedian. I think that everybody would love this guy. Very clean, but, you know, you could show him to your grandma, she'd laugh. You could show him to your little nephew, he'd laugh.
Right.
Like, he's just all around a great comedian. But he's got some famous bits, and at the end, he lets the crowd, you know, yell out what their favorite bit is, and they're all like, do the me monster. And you know what? He did it. And they laughed at it. I think that it's sometimes when you like, sometimes if they can tell you're not having fun saying that same old joke,
right?
That's when you've lost them. But if the crowd wants it, that's a different story.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. Oh, and I imagine there's a lot more pressure on that whole idea of you enjoying it too, right? Because if you're obviously bored, that's going to suck the fun right out of the room.
It takes everything out of the room. They just need to know that you're having a good time.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to figure that out.
But I live in Winnipeg. I've lived in Winnipeg for the past while, half my life. Half my life I've lived in Winnipeg. And you guys don't like Winnipeg? Yeah, it's a good city. I love it. I live in Wolseley. You guys know Wolseley? You know, the left-wing, hippie, granola-eating part of town? Yeah, I live there. I love it. I walked into a convenience store in Wolseley the other day, and there was a sign on the window that said, "We don't accept racism here." And I was like, has that been a problem? People trying to pay with racism? Just some guy's like, yeah, I'll get a Coke and a pack of cigarettes and, oh no. Hey, you ever hear the one about the black guy and the rabbi? What? It's as good as money, I tell ya. Ah, you don't accept nothing anymore. Back in my day, you could get a Coke and a bag of chips for only two slurs. The old days were fun. Everyone's putting those signs up in my neighborhood in Wolseley, like variations of "We don't welcome racism here." Because in Wolseley, if you're just being a good, regular person, we're going to tell you about it. My neighbor was putting up one of those signs in his yard the other day. It says, "We don't welcome racism here." I was like, not in my house either. I didn't know we were putting up signs. Was there like a town meeting that I wasn't... What? Now I look racist. And I already look racist. I need to get one of them signs. Because I do deal with a lot of racism, guys. Because mostly because racist people come up to me and say racist things because they think I'm racist too. I attract racist people. I don't mean to. They feel very comfortable sharing their racism with me. You know, it was hard enough losing my hair. Now everybody thinks I'm racist? That's not fair. My friend was like, well, you are a bit of a skinhead. I was like, I have a skinhead. I'm not a skinhead. Those are different. Skinheads have hair. They just cut it short. This is just me making the best of a bad situation. What do you want me to do? Grow it out so I have to comb it over? Everyone's like, that guy looks like shit. But at least he's not racist. I don't know. I don't want people to think I'm racist. It sucks, you know? I fully stopped waving over my head. I have to wave like this now, like a dork. Hi! I'm not racist! I have to say that while I wave. A visual joke, that'll go good on the recording. Audio only recording? I don't know. It's getting bad for me, guys. It's hard for me, too. I can't even go to Home Depot and buy a tiki torch without getting looks. Of course, I bought a few. They were on sale. But just trying to make my deck look nice, not start a parade or anything. Everyone's just scowling at me at Home Depot. except for this other bald white guy with a tiki torch who's like, yeah, we doing this? I was like, I don't know him. I'm not with him, guys. I'm just trying to keep mosquitoes away, not the Jews. Also, I'm pretty sure citronella doesn't do that.
Again, like, I'm not a comedy connoisseur. I like jokes. I watch stand-up. Sure. I watch comedy films, whatever. I've listened to some comedy albums over the years, too. But I find that I laugh the most when the person on stage is, like, losing their shit laughing. Like, when someone says something funny, and it's obviously funny to them, too, to the point where they're doubled over and like, you know, need to take a minute before they get back on the mic. Like,
sure.
That's always kind of seems like they are actually enjoying it rather than just going through the paces, right?
Yeah, they're in it. Like, they're in their act, you know? They have to be present in it, or it just seems like a person that is just reciting something. And
it's like a poetry reading with no rhyming.
Yeah. And then the contrary, the other side of that, there's people that don't seem to write at all and they don't seem to have a structure at all. And sometimes that can be detrimental too. Like, they don't know where they're going to go next.
Right.
I'm very written. Like, I am very written. I don't know. But then I try to hide that with little tricks.
Right. Well, now that this is recorded, you have this it's on tape. People are going to hear it for however long they decide to listen to you.
Okay.
How long does it take you from this point to sort of develop a completely different set? I mean, you know, whether you use some of the same jokes again in the future.
Sure.
But what's the turnover time for you, kind of the next act that you put together?
Well, it took me 15 years to get that hour, so I don't know. It'll probably be quicker. I have a little bit more of an idea what I'm doing now, but I wanted to get those jokes down that I have. Well, I've already started, like, I think I have like, since then, I think I have maybe 10 new minutes that I could conceivably put on an album that I think are good enough to put to tape. But it takes a long time. It takes a long time. You got to work those bits, and you're always finding new stuff within them. And
how do you know?
For me, it's not fast. Yeah.
What is the, like, at what point do you sort of realize this joke is complete in its current format? Like, does that ever happen, or?
No, I don't think so, because I'm still writing tags on things that are on the album.
Right.
Like, and probably that's maybe to keep myself interested in, like, I know I got this hot bit that I recorded, but if I'm going to keep doing that bit, I'm going to have to give it something for myself to kind of feel new doing it.
Right.
And I've still developed some of those bits a little bit further, or at least some of the ideas of those bits. So, like, maybe I'll do that bit, but then I have a whole second part now that's a different thing. So I'm jumping off a little bit from those things, because I can't think of any news, like, material. What am I supposed to talk about?
Right.
Being bald, being from the country, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's only so far you can take those jokes, right?
Yeah.
So what, where do you see the comedy community in Winnipeg going? Like, is it continuing to grow? It seems like it is, from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, I think right now it's definitely the best time for more established comedians in town. You know, you got Rumors, you got right. Yuck Yucks now, you got The Basement, you got you know, there's the Don't Tell comedy shows that have been happening, these secret comedy shows. You got more, like, booked stuff. I don't think our, and this is not me trying to be too critical, but I don't think our open mic scene is as strong as it used to be.
Okay.
So I think that's one thing that we're lacking in this town, is a place to try new jokes. I'm actually working on that. I'm trying to think of starting a night where, you know, established comedians are trying new jokes. Because you don't want to try brand new stuff when you're at the club and you're being paid, or you're out doing a corporate event. Like, you're not going to just whip out, what about this, you know?
And then it just bombs.
And then it just bombs. And you need that proving ground. You need that place where it's like, this is for trying new stuff out.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of missing that a bit, but it goes in waves, and it, you know, some bar closes and another one opens or whatever. Yeah. So
I'm
not too worried.
Is there much of a, what opportunities are out there for people who are getting started in this? Like, is open mics, is that sort of the place?
Yeah, that's the place to go. Like, anytime anybody asks, like, how did you do this? I'll just like, well, I slugged it out in open mics for, and I still do.
Yeah.
And you have to, and you go pretty much every chance you can. Like, it's something you have to put, you have to learn how to be comfortable on stage. You have to learn how to not do well too. Like, you have to learn how to kind of let it flow over you a bit. So a lot of people try it once and they quit, or they don't try it at all because they don't understand why they can't just get to where you are. And you're like, well, this is the only way. You have to fail a bunch of times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's actually fascinating you say that, because I think a lot of artistic creative pursuits are the same way. I mean, podcasting, sure. Like, I've been doing this for, I think this will be the 900th episode, actually, which is kind of cool.
Woo!
But like, that's a long time for doing this, but there's so many people who start out and they think that they're going to get, they see podcasters making money, like famous comedians or whoever doing shows, and they're like, oh, I can do that. I can talk about bullshit in the basement with my friends. And they do three episodes and they get sick of it because it hasn't worked yet, right?
And it hasn't worked yet.
And it might not work.
It's not that fast.
Right. It might not work for 20 years. It might not work ever. But like, there's, I think that that's sort of the natural sort of culling of people who aren't serious about it or aren't going to put in the effort. And I imagine it's very similar for comedy.
It's very similar for comedy. If you don't, like, you have to put in those. It's like, you know, the whole 10,000 hours thing. You have to do it. It's the only way to do it. If you don't do it, like, if you find a way to, like, you notice a lot with sometimes when there's like a kind of a somebody who's blew up, because TikTok and Instagram, you can blow up with a reel, you can blow up with your TikTok, and unless those comedians were comedians before, you know, this all went down, they're just kind of utilizing this new thing. If they were just got big off of that, you notice it when they come to your town and they do comedy. They're not seasoned.
Right.
They haven't the one went joke. Through all yeah. the Yeah, and they haven't bombed enough, and they haven't, and you really notice it. But comedians, I'm not saying you shouldn't use those things, because they can be really beneficial, especially if you were a good comic already.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's how most people, I think, who are outside of the core comedy fans see stand up. I mean, I definitely see more stand up just flipping through Instagram or whatever than I actually pursue on my own. Right?
Yeah, it is weird though. Like, the kind of comedy that's getting big is, I think it started because a lot of comics just wanted to, they didn't want to burn their jokes, right? So they started putting up crowd work. You know, that's when, for your audience, like, just when the comedian talks to the crowd. And that became the video that you see all the time.
Definitely.
Now for comedians. And that changes the crowd. That changes what they think a comedy show is. So I haven't really liked that, because I'll do crowd work, but I don't like doing it. Like, I'd rather not talk to them.
Right, right. Yeah, they're there to listen to you, not to, yeah for sure.
Yeah, that's the way I've always seen it. So I hope that fad kind of goes away a little bit. But because for me, comedy is very, it's something that I write pretty much down to the word. And, you know, I riff as well. I leave a little bit, some spots for myself to be loose. But, you know, since this is a music show, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I'm not the first person to say this, but for me, comedy is music. It's very rhythmic.
Yeah.
I definitely have a rhythm, like a tempo that I need to kind of lock into. And when I'm in that, that's when I'm at my best. So when something from the crowd, you know, takes me out of that, it can be hard to get back into it.
Sure, I believe that. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I come from a small town. I come from a little town called Around Dauphin. Yeah, it's up around Dauphin. Sometimes as kids, we go to actual Dauphin for shoes. That's when you know you're from a small town, when you have to go to a slightly bigger town for shoes. Sometimes I'll say, hey, where are you from? You from a small town? They go, yeah, Steinbach. I'm like, fuck you, that's a big town. You could probably get shoes there. Steinbach, they make their own shoes, probably. I don't know. Who knows what those Steinbach people are up to? Is that a slur? I don't know. I liked going to Dauphin as a kid. It might not sound exciting to you, but it's exciting to me. Like, when you come from a town of less than 500, going to a town of over 5,000, pretty exciting, you know? And they make it exciting. Like when you pull into Dauphin, it's not that exciting, but but when you pull into Dauphin, there's a sign, right? There's a, as off, most towns have a sign, but their sign's special. It says, Dauphin, the city of sunshine. That's their claim to fame. The sun. I don't know if you guys are travelers, but I've been to a few places. They've all had the sun. You ever pull into some small town, you're like, where the fuck's the sun? Where is it? Some old guy at the gas pump's like, oh, you must be looking for Dauphin. This is Russell. We haven't had the sun in some time. Not since Dauphin took it. You're like, what? They took the sun? They took the sun. You're like, oh, I guess I'll just pump my own gas. Do you work here, or are you just an old guy that they let hang around or something? What's going on? I like growing up in a small town, man. Like, Dauphin, oh, my God. Well, I grew up in around Dauphin. Dauphin's cool, too, you know? Dauphin, they have a radio station in Dauphin. I always thought that was pretty fun. 7:30 CKDM, the voice of the parkland. You guys have never heard it? Okay. I like my jokes to be really relevant to everybody. Now, they had the coolest radio show ever. It's called The Bargain Bin. It's the best hour of radio you've never heard. The Bargain Bin, because you don't know what it is. What it is, it's a call-in, buy-sell show. You know? It's like Kijiji, but for rednecks. And it's not so much interesting when they're selling things. Those are boring. It's always just like, ah, I got some ice cream pails for a dollar. You're like, why didn't I think of that, selling my ice cream pails? I could be raking in the money. I eat a lot of ice cream. No, it's more interesting when they're looking to buy. Because one time I heard a guy call in. He was like, yeah, this is Frank. Frank Tickleese. Yeah, I'm looking for a mitt. Oh, no, not the set. I lost a mitt. Oh, it's a left. Well, I'd like a Kodiak. That was what I had, but I'll take a hot pause. I don't care. And you're like, this guy's not going to get his mitt. But that's where you're wrong. Small town people are good, generous people. Not a minute later, some old lady's calling in. Oh, hi, this is Fran. Fran Tickleese. Oh, no relation. I have a whole box of mitts. Oh, they're all left. Oh, not left behind. Well, kind of a little bit. They're left-handed. Well, you see, my husband lost his arm in the Great War. Or maybe it was a baler accident. I don't remember. I'm old. Do you guys play some Brooks and Dunn? You're like, cool, they're going to play some Brooks and Dunn. Shaping up to be a pretty good day in the country.
How do people hear this? Because, I mean, most of the time I have a band on here, and it's all the usual platforms they hear it on, but also buy it at a show. Is that a thing with comedy? Like, would you be, do you bring a thing of CDs or something?
I don't have physical copies, but yeah, a lot of people have like download cards and stuff like that. I actually haven't made any of those, but yeah, you can hear it on through iTunes and Bandcamp, and that's where you can buy it, and Spotify and all the other streaming services have it. So
cool.
Yeah.
Would you,
good ideas.
I assume that I assume that Bandcamp is probably the place you'd prefer to send people to, right? Because at least you get something out of that.
Yeah, or even iTunes. Like, I mean, that's where I make a little bit of money, and it's nice when people buy it. It's
of
cool.
Course, yeah. So, this being a podcast, someone could hear it the day it comes out. In which case, this is all fresh. They could hear it 2 years from now. Apparently, I don't stop doing this ever. So, I mean, it could be 10 years from now. It could be episode 1800 or something.
Never stop.
Yeah, exactly. Can't stop, won't stop. But how does someone find out more about what you're doing as far as, upcoming shows? Maybe by the time someone hears this, you could already have a second album out. Who knows, right? What's the best way to follow your career?
You can follow me on Instagram. I'm literally looking up my Instagram handle right now. That's how non-social media-fied I am. I'm at J Rockarolla. That's J-R-O-C-K-A-R-O-L-L-A. I've had that for so long. I don't know. Maybe I should change it. Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram. I just update, you know, what shows I'm on and album stuff and everything else that goes along with it.
Well, and I'll link to the Bandcamp. I'll link to the Bandcamp at least in the show notes too, so people can check it out that way.
Sure.
For the people who are listening, sort of when this is fresh, do you have any in the near future any shows coming up that you want to plug?
Well, I think the one it would probably be too late, but I host and I produce the Winnipeg Comedy Showcase at the Park Theater.
So I was gonna say, is that annually or it's more often? Right?
It's like quarterly.
Okay.
So the next one is on May 19th, but you might be hearing it too late. But we have another one in the summer. I'm not sure of the date, but they come up regularly. There'll be one in the fall, one in the winter. And we've been doing that for 10 years.
Well,
now. Yeah, we've had our 10th year anniversary in February. And still going strong. Beyond that, I host at Yucks sometimes. I'll do guest spots at Rumors, and I'm around town. I still go to mics and cool. I practice jokes and see if, because you don't know if something's funny, even if you've been doing it for a while and you kind of have an idea of what's funny, you don't really know until they tell you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They being the audience. So
how often are you performing? Like, it sounds like you're trying to do it as much as you can, like in a given month, how many shows do you do?
It depends how lucky I am that month.
Of course, yeah.
I do some out of town stuff too. I get on some like kind of corporate, some small town things. But every week I try to get out at least like 2 to 3 times. There's usually I'll have like a book show on the weekend and then I'll do some mics during the week, trying new stuff or just working something that I maybe haven't done in a while and I want. Because you forget, you gotta get back in that rhythm. Got some shows coming up, and I just found out today I'm doing some shows in Montreal this summer in June. So, yeah,
that's awesome.
Trying to get out there. I feel like I got the chops to be able to do this on a more like consistent basis. I'm just kind of, Winnipeg is a smaller city with less people know about the talent we have here, so trying to break down some doors.
Awesome. Well, hopefully it goes well for you. One thing I was going to ask you earlier, and I forgot to mention this, was do you record every show you do? Like, how much of this do you have? I just wondering if you have an archive of just countless hours of comedy you've done, and like that's just sitting in a vault somewhere or something.
I wish, because I never recorded anything for the first 10 years of doing comedy. I had sporadic videos from time to time. If I did like the Rumors contest back in the day, I got some videos of that on like DVDs. But I didn't really record my stuff as just a general rule. But now I've started recording it more because it is a good way to look at like, oh, what went well, what didn't go well. I never did that before, and everyone always told me to. I still didn't, because I was like, I don't want to listen to myself right after. It does seem
kind of narcissistic, but I get it though. I mean, you sort of have to, right? To hear what worked and what didn't.
Yeah, and then sometimes you'll think like, well, that didn't work, and then you'll watch the tape, and you realize, oh, these people walked in during the middle of your joke, and that distracted everybody. It wasn't you.
Yeah,
you thought it was you, but it was these. It was kind of that. Or it's the opposite. You thought everybody was laughing at you, but they're just laughing at some random thing that happened in the audience.
Right.
So it is good to have. I wish I would have taken that more seriously sooner, but it is a good tool.
Cool.
But I still write like mostly like by hand or on my, computer. Like I'm very written. Some people, I know they think of things as more like they'll take video and then they'll just kind of work, like expand on that. But I have to get into the words. I think just from years of writing and doing writing as a profession.
Yeah.
That's how I operate.
You guys having a fun time? All right. Give it up for the Park Theater for letting me do this. God damn. We've been doing the Winnipeg Comedy Showcase here for 9 years, and it's so fun being able to show you guys the funniest comics in Winnipeg. I love this city, you know? Even though it's hard to love sometimes. Yeah. I like to travel, you know? I like to travel, especially through Canada, you know? Earlier this year, I was in Halifax, and in January, I was in Toronto, you know? I'm not bragging, but I've been to Toronto. And when I was in Toronto in January, it was like -6, -7, maybe -8 for the week I was there. And everywhere I went, you know, on the street, people were saying, "Cold enough for you?" I was like, "Nah, I'm from Winnipeg." And they're like, "Oh, that's too bad." It's like, it's not that bad. But then I got back to Winnipeg in February and I realized, it is that bad. And I realized something about Winnipeggers. Winnipeggers have a victim's mentality. And our abuser is Winnipeg. And we have to get out of this relationship. We're always making excuses for Winnipeg as Winnipeggers, aren't we? You know? We're always covering for Winnipeg. Like, you'll see your friend Martha, you know? No one's named Martha anymore, but let's pretend for the joke. Like, "Martha, whoa, what's that on your face? Oh my God, is that frostbite? What happened there?" "Oh, this. I was dressed wrong. I should have covered up. I was showing too much skin. You don't know Winnipeg like I do. Winnipeg's nice to me in the summer." You're like, okay. "Oh my God, but what about that big bruise on your arm? Oh, Martha, did you slip on the ice or something?" "Oh, this? My boyfriend hit me. It wasn't Winnipeg, if that's what you're thinking. You don't know Winnipeg like I do. Winnipeg has a good heart. Heart of the continent, they say." Like, okay, Martha. But here's the thing. One last sip of my big whiskey. Didn't even finish it. Wow. Here's the thing. Winnipeg, like all abusers, will try to pretend that it's the victim. Because that's what abusers do. They like to turn the tables around and pretend that they're the victim. And Winnipeg is no different. You try to leave Winnipeg, and Winnipeg's like, "I used to be somebody." "Yeah, you leave." Winnipeg's an old man. This joke only works if you know he's an old man. "I used to be somebody. They used to call me the Chicago of the North. Oh, I was one great city. But then those damn Yankees built the Panama Canal and I was out of work." That's true. You can look it up. "It's somebody else, isn't it? Huh? Who are you leaving me for? Huh? Is it Cal? Is it Gary?" It's usually one of those two guys. "Is it my arch nemesis, Ed Munton? Huh? Is it Ed Munton? That bastard. You leave just like all the rest. Everybody leaves old Winnipeg. Even my sons left. My golden boys." "First it was Burton. Oh, Burton. You never knew if he was coming or going. One day he said he was going out for a nip. He never came back. Last I heard, he took off with some American woman. I told him to stay away from her." You can see where this is going. "Then my second son, Randy. Oh, Randy. I had big plans for Randy. Big plans. He said he was going to take care of the business. But he left. Oh, dear Randy. I fear he'll never be back, man." A lot of weird sounding laughs there. A lot of people laugh like, "Whoa." "And then it was my youngest, Neil. Yeah, the young one. Oh, they say he's got a heart of gold, but he never has anything nice to say about his old man.
But you know what? He's a lot like me. And he knows it. Fuck him. The northern men don't need him around anyhow.
That was a Skinner reference. I don't know.
When you think about it, I'm the victim. Me, Winnipeg. The hurting's on me. I can never be free. These eyes are crying. These eyes have been so long, the longer they had with you.
Then Winnipeg looks up to see if you're affected by any of this. And if you're not,
his eyes!
Oh, I can't sing. I shouldn't have tried. All right, I think I'm done. Thank you. That's right. Thank you very much, everybody. It's time for me to go. All right, everybody, have a good night. See you later. Thanks for coming.